We're glad that you're here. I want to thank our praise team and the band and all the folks that work back in the tech over there to make it possible, not only for good sound here, doing their best to provide on Zoom a good experience. And so you folks that are sitting at home, you may be in your jammies. That's fine. If you come back to church, please don't wear your jammies, okay? We just appreciate that. Someday, why not? So I want to mention for just a second here, we're ending up the summer, and I want to thank everybody who has financially supported the church over these last, for these first 6 months, 7 months of the year. We've been pretty strong. August is always tough, and just want to encourage you to be faithful in your giving and stuff. You can mail it to the church, or you can pay online, or give your offering online. But we've done very well, and we have some things we want to do for the fall season. And hopefully we'll get more of you inside the auditorium here as we see this pandemic begin to subside, and we're looking forward to that. Last week, I announced that for about 5 weeks, I'm going to be speaking, and then I'll take a break on the 20th of September. Pastor Tony's going to be speaking, and then we're going to kick off our fall season around the 27th or the first part of October with a new series. But I decided for about 5 weeks here to do some character studies. And last week we talked about Daniel in the lion's den, and I pointed out some things that maybe you never knew before that were maybe somewhat interesting, but it was a great lesson of faith and of fortitude and someone who basically stuck to his guns no matter what. Today's lesson is a little unusual because, you know, it's one of those subject matters that when you start reading the passages and stuff, you sometimes have to figure out how to explain this to your children. But it is in the scriptures. It's a wonderful story, and I really wanted us to talk about it today. We're going to talk about Rahab. And before I get into the scriptures and stuff, and this is mostly an expository, I want to kind of lay the groundwork down. A few weeks ago, we had talked about the 12 spies that at the beginning of the wilderness journey that were sent into the promised land, and 10 of them came back with a bad report, and 2 came back and said a good report, Joshua and Caleb. And they wanted to take the land, but the 10 people convinced all the people that were there in Israel that just came out of Egypt that they can't get the land. It is too tough. There are too many enemies there. They said that the people are like giants there. And so they had this big discourse, and Moses was trying to hold the whole thing together. They thought about getting rid of Moses. They thought about stoning Joshua and Caleb. At the end of that story, we find that they decided as a group nation that they would not go into the promised land at that time. And because God saw their lack of faith and trust and their lack of confidence in him, he basically said that you will wander in the wilderness and to this whole generation that was negative that will pass off the scene. And once that happens, then basically we're open the doors for you to have the promised land. And so about 39 years had gone by, and that's why many times you hear folks say, what is an actual generation? They see a generation is 40 years or so. Generation, usually in my book, is when a grandfather, a father, and the son have all just passed off the scene. That's a full generation. But for 39 years, they wandered in the wilderness. They had some good times and bad times. They had some great times of faith. They had some great times of dealing with the temple and the sacrifices and all the things they needed to do. But God kept his word that these generations that did not trust me, that were led by these 10 individuals that said we could not overtake the land, you will wander until your generations are gone. And it was about 39 years later we pick up the story. And here's where we pick up the story. Now you get to the point where Moses has gone off the scene. Moses had his second in command, and that was Joshua. Joshua was an individual that was very loyal to Moses. He was one of the spies 39 years ago. He was one of the ones that had confidence in God, and God blessed him because of that. And he was one of the generations that was allowed to go into the promised land eventually. Now, Joshua is in charge of this whole kingdom. And so God tells Joshua, it's time for you now. All those generations that wandered in the wilderness, that did not believe, did not trust me, they've gone off the scene. He says, now I want you to lead these people into the promised land, and I want you to get prepared for that. And so what Joshua does, he selects 2 spies. Now, he got smart, by the way, because the first time they had 12 spies. That didn't work out real well. So Joshua wasn't going to take his chances. He wasn't about to say, hey, listen, 12 more guys. That's kind of going against the odds. So he says, 2 more people, and I imagine the people that he chose, obviously, are people that have been loyal to him and loyal to Moses and had great faith. And he's going to send them into the promised land. They're going to go over and they're going to spy out the situation. Not that there were a lot of unknowns, but they wanted to make sure they knew exactly what to do. And the first place they wanted to spy out was the city of Jericho. And Jericho, because it was the greatest fortress, it was the largest populace of people, and they knew they had to get past that monster first. They had to tackle that enemy first before they went any further. And so Joshua sends these two spies into the promised land to spy out. But as soon as they got in, it was discovered that they were there. Now, I can't really understand and kind of make up the story about how they got found out or whatever. I'm sure I get the idea that the folks that were inside of the promised land were spying out on them. In fact, I truly believe that. When you read the passage we're going to read, you get the idea that they knew a lot about Israel's and what they had done and their victory and their God. And so there was a lot of information going back and forth. So these two spies, they go in, and so they decide to hide out, and there was a woman who basically decided to hide them. And it's an interesting story, because there's a story where when you're teaching this in Sunday school, and sometimes it's hard to teach this in Sunday school, but it's a great story to teach. You got to explain to kids why it was all right for Rahab to lie. And because in the story here, you know, because the end of the story is a great picture of something, by the way, but obviously, Rahab, as you're going to find the story, when they came to find the spies and they heard that maybe they were at Rahab's house, and she said, they're not there. I don't know who you're looking for. She outright lied. And it's always been difficult. It's one of those questions when you get to heaven, you want to ask God about, like, you know, all these great stories about people with faith. Last week, Daniel, when he was told not to pray, and he went ahead and prayed anyways, he stood his ground. Why do we have this, what I call hero of the faith? But the whole story of Rahab starts because she lied. And I kind of put it in my mind this way, and this isn't the best way, but I'm going to give it to you straight out. You know, people say sometimes that all sins are equal, and be honest with you, if you study scriptures, there are obviously worse sins than other sins. They're all accountable to God. They're all missing the mark, as they say in scripture. But the bottom line is, you know, we know that some are worse than others, humanly speaking, okay? And I want to put it this way here before we get into the story. Say, for instance, you're in your house and you have an intruders that come in and they're trying to break in. And so you tell your kids to go downstairs and hide in the basement in a place that no one could find them. And the intruders come in and they say to you, is anybody else in the house? What do? You say no. Do you think God is going to be mad at you? Think God's going, nope, you should have told them. No. I think there's some understandings that would... You do something for righteous sake. When you do something to protect innocent, when you do something to in that realm there, God understands that, and that's why I believe God calls and used this woman in a great way. So we're going to pick up and read. It's a long chapter. I may stop and say a few things, but I'm going to probably just want to go through the story and then give you some other things to think about this morning. Joshua chapter 2, verses 1 through 24. Then Joshua, the son of Nun, secretly sent two spies into Shittim, and go look over the land, he said, especially Jericho. So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. The king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent a message to Rahab, bring out the men who came to you and entered your house because they have come to spy out the whole land. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. She said, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gates, they left, and I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them. But she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them in the stalks of flax that she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone, the gate was shut. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up to the roof and said to them, I know that the Lord has given you this land, and a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard of how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you, and when you came out of Egypt, and what you did in Shihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. And I want to stop right there. Obviously, you can sit there. There's some information flowing. People in the promised land, people in Jericho, were told of all the different things that Israel had gone through, including the Red Sea 39 or 40 years before. So you got to imagine there was some crossover of spying going on. Verse 11, and when we heard it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage fell because of you. And the Lord your God is a God of heaven above all the earth. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you show kindness to my family because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and my mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. I want to go back real quick here in verse number 12 when it says here this. It says, now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness. The Hebrew word that's used here is called hesed, and it's the same word used many times for covenant or covering. And it's interesting because when you get to the end of the story and you learn about the red cord or the red rope that's put on the doorpost, you go back to where they had the Hebrew children leaving Egypt, and they were told that when the death angel came to put the blood of the lamb around the doorpost as a covering, a hesed. Well, apparently she's gotten this information of their language, and she knows exactly. So she's not just saying show kindness to me. She says make a covenant with me. And put a covering over my house and all that are in my house that nothing will happen to us. And really, it's a kind of a symbolic about the whole thing of the Passover. Once again, when you come in, you will pass over my house. Verse number 14. Our lives for your lives, the man assured her. If you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land. So she let them down by a rope through the window. For the house she lived in was part of the city wall. And I'm going to talk about that in a second here, too. Part of the city wall. I'm going to say it now. I have this image, because if you know the story of Jericho, you know they came in and they marched around, 7 days, and they blew their trumpets and they shouted, and the walls of Jericho fell. But, of course, her home was built into the wall. So I got this image. All the walls are gone, and there is one piece of rock standing with a window, with a red rope out of it. Now, I don't know about you, that's a lot of risk for her to be taking, because everybody's pretty much going to identify she had something to do with this, because she's the only one making it out of here. So I just thought that was quite interesting here. Verse 16, so she said to them, go to the hills so the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourself there for 3 days until they return, and then go your way. Now the men had said to her, the oath you made to us swear will not be binding on us unless when we enter the land, you tied a scarlet cord to the window through which you let us down. Unless you have brought your father, your mother, your brother, and all your families into the house, if any of them go outside your house in the street, their blood will be on their own heads, and we will not be responsible. As for those who are in the house with you, their blood will be on our heads if any hands are laid on them. But if you tell what we are doing, we will be released from our oath, hasad, the kindness, the covenant. You made us swear. Agreed, she replied. Let it be as you say. So she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. And when they had left, they went to the hills and stayed there 3 days until the pursuers had searched all along the road and returned without finding them. Then the two men started back. They went down out of the hills of the ford of the rivers and came to Joshua, the son of Nun, and told him everything that had happened to him. They said to Joshua, the Lord has surely given us the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us. Now, let me talk about a few things here as we get into this. It's interesting. They went in to spy the land. The question is, did they really get to spy the land? No. See, in some ways we think, you know, they didn't get to finish their objective. God has a way many times of taking our objective and making it simpler. They needed to know what they were up against. They needed to know when they got there was what the battle was going to be like. They needed to know exactly what the attitude and what the mindset of the people are. When they get in there, they found out that they've been found out, and so they quickly hide, and they've been invited to come in, and I don't want to get into the whole details why you get invited to Rahab's house, but they went into Rahab's house, and of course, she recognized the fact of who they were. And here's the thing. It wasn't uncommon, though. No one really thought too much about it until someone said something about the spies going to this house. So they go into this house, and all of a sudden they have this dialogue. We know that the king of Jericho sent people there to say to her, listen, you need to let these guys out. We want to capture them. She said, yeah, they came by. I didn't know what they wanted. And, you know, after they were here for a little while, they left. And I think they went out the gate, and I think went down the road towards Jordan. He said, if you really, you know, hurry up, you can go after them. These guys took off, and they did exactly what she said. And then she had this dialogue with them. She says, listen, make a covenant with me that when you come, that you will save my family. And they said, well, anybody in your house with you, you consider family, in your house, we will save. And they said that put out a red rope. Now, here's the thing. They said put it out immediately. She didn't know when they were coming back. So she had this sign, red rope, hanging out her window the moment they left there. But here's the thing. They went into the land to try to figure out what was they were up against. They didn't have to. She told them everything they needed to know. We've heard about your God. We heard about how powerful he is. We heard about the Red Sea. And the people that are in this town, including leadership, they're trembling with fear. The spies got everything they needed to know at one place, one-stop shopping, real quick. So not only did God protect them from the king of Jericho, God supplied an individual who basically was able to inform them of what the people are like, what the temperature of the leadership is, that they're fearful, they're scared, and they're quaking at their boots because of what they heard about the great nation of Israel, the people of God. So they got everything they needed. They take off. They go out and hide in the hills for a few days, knowing that those guys are going to come back from Jordan. They don't want to pass on the road going both ways. And as soon as it was clear, they went back. They tell Joshua, hey, we're ready to go. Now, I'm going to give you some chapters ahead real quick here so you know what happens in the story. They do come into Jericho. We know the story of Joshua, and God tells him, you're not going to use might. You're not going to use weaponry. You're going to march around the city of Jericho 7 days, and you're going to do all these things. On the last day, you're going to blow the trumpets, and you are going to shout as loud as you can, the most radical warfare I've ever heard in my life, but it definitely worked. But here, I want you to think, you know why they did that? Remember what Rahab said. Rahab said, they're scared. So what better way to win victory is to scare them some more? I mean, the worst thing you can have when you're afraid of something is anticipation. It'd been one thing for them to go knock down the doors and go in and fight. But here they already got word from Rahab that these people are scared of you. They've heard stories about your God. And all of a sudden, these people are looking over the wall, and here comes this nation of Israel. Here comes God's chosen people. And they come, and they're looking at them. They're not carrying any armament. And they start marching around day one. And then they go sit back and have a picnic. They march around day two, and they do this. And they're thinking to themselves, and I can imagine no one was sleeping in Jericho. They didn't know when it was. These folks went back and slept at night, but the folks in Jericho went, well, maybe it's tonight. Maybe we don't know what they're up against. Maybe they're attacking. I imagine for 7 days, they are totally exhausted. And then they march around, and they yell and shout, and the walls came down, all except for that one area there that stuck out like a sore thumb, Rahab with the red thing hanging out of the window. Now, I won't get into much more of the battle thing and stuff, but they go in and they destroy the city, and the enemy is destroyed and stuff. And everybody has a hard time handling these warfare things in the Old Testament. But these are enemies of God's people, and obviously they would have sacked them and destroyed them if they could have. Well, Rahab is rescued. And Rahab kept her word. And Joshua and his men kept their word. And we don't have a lot of scriptures that tell us what happened to Rahab. But basically, Rahab becomes a key component in the rest of biblical history. It's interesting, when you read about Rahab other places, every single time, except for one I can find, that Rahab is mentioned, it's always Rahab the prostitute. I don't know, how would you like to go through life, even after you got yourself ready for God and right with God, that was always your title? But I think the reason why it was emphasized in the scriptures is because God wanted them to understand that you can come from a past, but it's never too late to change anything and take a risk and trust God and have faith and show faith. And that's the story of Rahab. Now, it's interesting. That's not where the story of Rahab concludes. In the Bible, there are a number of places that talk about the great heroes of the faith. The most known one is in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 basically is what we call the list of heroes of faith. Some of them have names that God tells us their names. Some are unknown. In fact, he gets to the point where he starts talking about them in generalities. He talks about the great faith of Noah. He talks about the great faith of Moses. He talks about the great faith of Abraham. He gives detail about them. And in this passage of the book of Hebrews, of those of the heroes of great faith, all of a sudden, this one individual shows up, enlisted in the Hall of Fame. And look what it says here. It says in Hebrews chapter number 11, verse 31, it says this: by faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. She shows up in this list. I mean, you're talking a couple thousand years later, she shows up in this list as a hero of the faith. Once again, the writer gives her her title, at the same time gives her name. Like, you could probably leave that off now. We know who she is. But anyways, it's listed in the Hall of Fame of faith. Because she welcomed the spies, she was not killed by those who are disobedient. And I want to point out to you in a second, we're talking about a little more of faith. But by faith, she did something. See, faith without action isn't really faith. Faith without performance, in a sense, is not really faith. If you trust God, then you're going to show that you trust God with all parts of your life. And so it says here, by faith, Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, she acted upon it. She took a risk. And faith sometimes can be compared with risk. But she did action. And that's the kind of theme that about Rahab's life. Faith without doing something really isn't faith. People are going to say, I trust God. Some people say, I trust God with my finances, but I can't trust God enough to be faithful in offerings and tithes. That's not faith. You don't truly trust God then. You can say that, you know, I trust God for my job and my work or whatever, but many times we fret and worry about our job and our work, and really, that's not faith if you're not truly relaxed about it, knowing that God has all things put together. Faith, even during a pandemic, we say, what's going to happen? People are going to get sick. Well, I have faith that God has the answer. And I have not panicked during this. Have I enjoyed all the seclusion and isolation and stuff? No. But I do know that God is bigger than this, and I trust God for the outcome of this. And so faith is always followed by action. And how do I know that with Rahab? Because it comes up again, and we're going to read this. In the book of James, let me start out by reading about what James says is really what faith is. In the book of James, chapter number 2, verse 14 through 17, it says this: what good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about the physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself is not accompanied by actions is dead or worthless. So that's the description that James gives of faith. What we're talking about here about Rahab. She had faith and she took a risk. She did something that was outside her comfort zone, but she did it. And so James talks about the idea of what faith is. It's followed by deeds. Then it goes down in chapter 2, verse 25 through 26. Rahab comes up again. In the same way, was not even Rahab, the prostitute, considered righteous for what she did when she gave lodging to the spies and sent them off into different directions? As the body without spirit is dead, so is faith without deeds is dead. This story in the Old Testament, a story of a person who basically lied to save the two spies, and we talked about all that dynamic there. A person who was of ill repute, a person who had no credibility, a person that many people did not like, hated, and many people wanted, you know, everybody to stay away from this person. This person had a rocky life, and all of a sudden, things changed at one episode. And what changed was, this person trusted in the God of Israel because she heard all the great things. And not only did she trust, she took steps to interfere with a possible killing of two spies. And then even further, she stepped out and said, I'll make a covenant that I'll get you back home if you, when you come here, and I know you're coming because God has given your land. I've heard the stories. I want to be protected. And they said, tell you what, we want to make, you need to make a public demonstration. They knew where her house was. They knew where she, they could have said, when you get there, we're going to march around seven times. They had a lot of time to say, not that window. This isn't rocket science. They could have done that. They wanted an act of faith by her. They wanted her to step out and make a public demonstration that I will protect you. So she hung the cord out the window. And when they got there, they didn't take that portion of the wall down. And they saved her and her family. And all of a sudden, thousands of years later, we have the New Testament. And I believe the book of Hebrews is written by the Apostle Paul as a silent author. But all of a sudden, you have Paul saying here, and he says, listen, you know, she's in the heroes of the faith, along with Abraham, Moses, and Noah, and all the rest. Then you find James talks about faith, and James is a half-brother of Jesus Christ, which I'm going to get to in just a second here, half-brother of Jesus Christ, and he writes about this, he writes about faith, and then he decides to talk about Rahab, was not accounted righteous for her because she had faith, and she protected and sent them out. She did something. She was a person of great faith, but her story doesn't end there. Let's go a little further. I'm going to set this up before we go there, okay? So now, what happened to Rahab? Really not a lot of history to tell us this, but apparently once they got in there, they started setting up their kingdom. They protected her and her family. They sent her someplace to live. They were building their cities to live in. And I'll kind of give it to you real quick here. She ended up in a place called Bethlehem. Now, she's there. All the wars have gone by and stuff. Things have settled down. And now cities are being built. And all of a sudden, she gets involved with someone who had the authority to head up the building of Bethlehem. In fact, in 1 Chronicles, I don't have the passage here, it says that this person was the father of Bethlehem. And from what I read, meaning the founder of Bethlehem. And his name was Salmon. And I believe that Rahab went back there. It was great heard what she did. And all of a sudden, Salma took a liking to her, and they began to court, and they began to get married. And they got married, and they started building a family. And she became the first lady of Bethlehem from everything I can read. Externally, outside of scriptures, history references, stuff like that. And all of a sudden, she has a family. This person who people shunned when she was in Jericho now is the first lady of Bethlehem. And look what it says here in the book of Matthew. This is the genealogy. A lot of folks don't read genealogies. This is the legal history of the genealogy. And I'm just going to read a little bit of it. But in verse 5 and 6 of Matthew chapter 1, it says this. Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. And Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse. And Jesse, the father of King David. She was a great grandmother of the king of Israel. That's not the coolest part of this. Not only is she the great grandmother of the king of Israel, but you drop down to Matthew chapter 1, verse 16. When you get to the end of the genealogies, this goes forward from King David, from grandma Rahab, and Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, and Mary was the mother of Jesus, called the Messiah. She is the great, 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 great grandmother of Joseph, the legal descendants for Jesus Christ, Rahab. You notice what she was taken as a wife, they left off the title. She's no longer called what we thought she was called. Now she is the grandmother. She's in the lineage of the Messiah, Jesus Christ. Which tells you this, it's never too late. No matter where you've been, what you've done, what life has looked like, no matter what people thought of you, no matter what your background, no matter how much trouble you caused when you were young, I went through that, no matter what, it's never too late to make a decision in faith and change the course of history for your life and the life of others. Because of Rahab's decision, we have hope today. It's never too late. Let me give you the walk away. God does not focus on your past. He focuses on your potential. It's never too late. Interesting story to talk about, but I got to tell you, it's one of the fun ones to look at all that took place and where it ended. And where it ended. It's never too late. Would you bow your heads for just a moment? We're going to do these character studies for the next few weeks. I enjoy studying them. I'm trying to choose some that are not always right in the mainstream, and this is one of them. But I got to tell you, it's just an incredible thing to think about that no matter where we've been, what we've done, what our life has been about, there's never a point where you can't begin to change. Now, here's the thing, too. God does not hold your past against you. In fact, sometimes God leverages where you've been for where you're going. And Rahab is a perfect example of hope. First Lady of Bethlehem, from all that I can tell in my studies. Great-grandmother of the King of Israel, and in the ancestry of Jesus Christ. God didn't care how her life started. God just cared about how it ended. And she took a risk, and she made a decision. I will trust you. I will follow you. I will surrender to you. That's her story. Father, we thank you for bringing us together. I pray, Lord, that you would just use these lessons we're doing from last week with Daniel, today with Rahab, and God, as we move forward with the other studies, Lord, that just that we learn from great people that you use in scriptures, and it gives us confidence of how you can use us. We ask you, put this in our hearts and give us straight, great faith, especially as we go through even this pandemic. God, we know we are more than conquerors. We trust you in that. We ask in Christ's name. Amen.